Good morning. I'm Lakshmi Parthasarathy, and joining me today is Stephen Porter. He's Associate Professor of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at Brown University, and we'll be talking about how to sustainably feed the world in the 21st century. He studied two interconnected global challenges, feeding the world and protecting the environment. He's warned that by 2050, the global population will increase from 7 to 10 billion people, and that we'll need to produce nearly 70% more food than we do today. This will require the world to either farm more land or make more food on land that's already farmed. Dr. Porter, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before we delve into your research and the question of farming more land versus more intensive farming, can you just help us understand the definition of sustainability?
Yeah, it would be wonderful if there was a very easy definition. So there are many, and I guess what I would say is that a sustainable system or a sustainable food production system is one that can provide us with what we need indefinitely without the production in 1 year degrading our ability to maintain that production in the future.
Fantastic. That's much more accessible. Now, I'd like to just revisit your choice of research here. How sustainable is farming more land to keep up with feeding a growing population?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. So those two choices, we can either farm more land or we can get more food out of the land that we already farm. Those are sort of end members, right? It could be some mix of both. But the problem with farming more land is there's not a lot of land left to farm. If you add up the area of all the farms in the world, it roughly equals the size of South America. And if you add up the land that we graze animals on, it roughly equals the size of Africa. So we're already using an enormous fraction of the Earth's surface to produce food. What are the areas that are left? Well, there are areas like the Amazon forest where I do my research. There's things like the Sahara Desert, which are not obviously good for farming. And then there are places that used to be farms, like here in New England, that have regrown and are now forests after having been farmed during colonial times. So the option to expand onto new land is problematic because there just isn't that much more land available. On the other hand, we know that the way that we currently produce food in very high amounts, for example, in the American Midwest, has a lot of negative environmental consequences and is not a sustainable production system. So it depends on fossil fuel-produced fertilizers. It produces an enormous amount of pollution that ends up flowing down the Mississippi River and causing large dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico, which impact fisheries. And so we know that the way we're doing it now is not sustainable. Add on to that the fact that that climate is going to be changing and where we grow crops is going to change, or the crop types we grow are going to have to change. And you have a very unsustainable food production system either way. And so that's why I really think it's one of the great challenges of the 21st century is to how to figure out to sustainably feed us all in the face of climate change and with not a lot of extra land to move on to.
Right. Now, it sounds like both of these options have some drawbacks.
That's correct.
Are there other ways to reduce the growth in the amount of food that we'll need to produce?
Yeah, there are, and those are going to be critically important. So you mentioned at the top of the show that we would roughly need 70% more food, and that's obviously an estimate, and estimates range. But both of those estimates, but those estimates depend on two key factors. One, our population is going to grow, so more people, you need more food. Two, there's an assumption that as the population grows, the world will get wealthier. And as the world gets wealthier, people tend to eat more meat. So if you look at meat consumption and you plot it against how wealthy people are, the wealthier the country is, the more meat they eat, with some exceptions, for example, in India, where there's a religious reason against eating beef. So those two assumptions are embedded in this idea of we're going to need a lot more food. So the first thing we can do to not need that much more food is to change diets. If we move away from meat consumption, particularly beef consumption, which requires a lot of land to produce a few calories, basically, then that estimate will come down. We will need less food. Also, we waste a lot of food. It depends on the country, and it depends, and the reasons for that food waste depend on the country. But, you know, somewhere around a third of the food that we produce is wasted, a little bit more actually in this country. And so there are innovative ways to deal with food waste, to recycle that food waste and use it as fertilizer that could potentially reduce the demand for food as well. And if we did both of those things, if we shifted people towards a much more vegetarian diet and we reduce food waste, then the increase in the amount of food needed by 2050 would be reduced substantially.
Now, you mentioned a third of our food is being wasted.
It's an estimate, but yeah.
Help us understand what that means.
Okay, sure. So there are several places where food gets wasted. The first is farmers simply don't sell some produce, for example, that is ugly because Americans don't want to buy things that look bad. And there's actually now an ugly food movement to try and get that stuff off farms and into places where it can be used. But there are many other waste streams along the way. Supermarkets have to throw things out if they pass the expiration date, even though the expiration date doesn't particularly mean much for many foods. If you have a carton of eggs and one egg is broken, the supermarket has to throw it out. And then, of course, as you know, we are a pretty wasteful society, and we buy a lot of food and simply don't use it and then throw it away. So at every step of the way, there are opportunities to reclaim that food. There's some innovative work, for example, that some colleagues of mine are doing to try and take food waste from restaurants and raise insects on that food waste and then feed that to animals. So currently we feed animals by harvesting fish from the ocean unsustainably and feeding those small fish to either other fish or things like chickens. But you could potentially replace that with insects that are raised on our food waste. That would be a more sustainable path forward. So there are lots of opportunities for innovation, and they're starting to take place in some places, but much more is needed if we're going to really get that number down.
In case you're just tuning in, I'm Lakshmi Parthasarathy here with Stephen Porter, professor of ecology and evolutionary biology at Brown University. Now, Dr. Porter, I understand that you've been doing some research yourself in the Amazon around soybean farming. Is this showing any potential solution for the future of sustainable farming?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, and one that I think I don't yet have an answer. Let me instead answer a question about why it's so complicated. I know that's not as satisfying, but it's a kind of interesting story. So I was just down in the Amazon a few weeks ago on a soybean farm that's as big as New York City and all its boroughs. You can see it if you look at a Google Earth image of South America. You can actually see this farm. It's that big.
Wow.
And when you go there, you see, if you look at a very small scale, you see a bunch of recycling bins, all different, many more than we have in the U.S. And you think, oh, here's a company, you know, devoted to at least some environmental thing. And then you take a step back and you see a soy facility that can dry 45 million tons of soy in this huge multiple football field drying oven carved out of what used to be the Amazon. And you say, oh my God, this is the least sustainable thing I've ever seen. Like, here's this giant soybean field. It's a monoculture of soy, one plant growing as far as the eye can see in what used to be this super diverse rainforest. So you say, okay, that's very unsustainable. And then you go out another layer and you say, well, you know, this was originally cut down for pasture, where we grew which produced almost no food at all, just a few cows for several acres. And so they cleared the forest for pasture. Now it's this giant soybean field. At least it's producing more food. Maybe that is a way of intensifying, of growing more food per area. Maybe this isn't so bad after all. Then you say, well, what are they doing with all these soybeans? Well, they're actually shipping these soybeans mostly to China to feed a growing demand for meat. So then you say, well, that's actually not sustainable because meat is a very inefficient way of consuming calories. So that's one side of the story, and it just sort of gives you an example of the layers of difficulty in understanding sustainability, but I'm going to add one more on there. There's been some recent work by some sociologist colleagues of mine that suggest that places in Brazil where there are these really big soybean farms tend to have lower rates of deforestation in the Amazon than places where there are small landholders. Part of that is that we think that those soybean farmers, the very big ones, they're more influenced by international pressure. So they're selling their soy to Walmart or to Cargill or some giant multinational. And if there's pressure from the international community, these giant soybean farms are susceptible to that. Whereas a smallholder who's just trying to make a living on their land, they don't care about the international pressure. They need to feed their family. So I can't tell you that it's more sustainable in the Amazon. I can tell you that there are different challenges to sustainability there than, for example, in the American Midwest. And we need to understand how to optimize both systems, both in Brazil and in the U.S., if we're going to make any progress on sustainability.
Now, how do we optimize that system in the United States? What can policymakers be doing at the federal, state, and local levels to ensure both food security and sustainability this century?
Well, I think one of the main things we can do is stop incentivizing feeding crops to animals. So most of the corn, for example, that we grow here in the United States is not eaten by people. It's eaten by animals. And that means we have to grow about 10 times as much corn as we would if we ate that corn or some other plant directly. So that's critical. So the first thing we need to do is we need to stop feeding food to animals. We need to feed it to people. The next thing we can do is start to innovate in how we manage the way that fertilizer leaves farms. So farmers use a lot more fertilizer than they need. And there has been progress in the U.S. in particular in reducing somewhat the amount of fertilizer that farmers use. You could say, well, why do we want to reduce fertilizer? We want to reduce fertilizer use not because we want to reduce the amount of crop we grow, but because we want to reduce the amount of fertilizer that runs off the farmland into the rivers and causes pollution. Or is pollution. And so timing, using technology to make sure you put the fertilizer on right when the crop needs it, and therefore less of that fertilizer ends up in rivers and more of it ends up in the plant, that means that farmers can use less, they can save more money, and they can produce the same amount of food. China is actually leading the way on innovating in this. There have been some recent papers indicating a sort of improved way of doing particularly corn agriculture. And China has been adopting this at a very large scale. Here in the U.S., we haven't been driven by a single policy quite as much as in China. But there is innovation happening everywhere. There's a really interesting study in Iowa where planting just a little bit of prairie vegetation in watersheds that have a lot of corn can really reduce nutrient runoff and can also build up soil and provide habitat for example, migrating animals. So win-win-win. There's a list of farmers wanting to sign up longer than we can accommodate. And I should just say that that study in particular has a lot of traction with me because both Mark Bittman, who's sort of a foodie liberal New York Times type, and the Iowa Farm Bureau both think this is a great idea. So there are very few things I can point to where those sides agree, and that's one of them.
Well, it sounds like we have a lot more work to be doing here in the United States, but I would like to just bring us down to the individual level as well. Sustainably producing food sounds complicated and somewhat overwhelming, frankly.
Yep.
How does your average consumer go about making day-to-day choices that support food sustainability and protect the environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is overwhelming, and some of it has to be solved at sort of a policy level, right? So what can the consumer do? The first thing you can do is eat less meat. Especially if you eat a lot of beef, but if you eat beef, you can shift more to chicken or to some types of fish, particularly freshwater farmed fish like tilapia. Actually, it's interesting. U.S. beef consumption peaked in the 70s and has been falling ever since, replaced mostly by chicken. So the next step is sort of trying to reduce on the chicken. And there's some really interesting efforts now to sort of breed the taste of meat into other organisms like yeast, and they're the first sort of yeast-based burgers that taste exactly like beef are now on the market, and I expect to see a lot more of that coming down the pike. So switch to less meat. The second thing is, don't always assume that local is better. Local food is wonderful for supporting your local community, but it isn't always the right solution in terms of environmental footprint. It really depends. And if you go to a farmer's market and ask your local farmer, is this sustainably harvested? I'm sure they'll say yes. But it isn't always the case. Not that I'm against local food. And
are there any other similar consumer habits that people should understand could potentially be doing more harm to the environment?
I think the amount of food waste that comes out of your house is an important thing to think about. And that can be kind of overwhelming. And I think one of the things you can do at home is to avoid throwing things out just because it's near the expiration date. Try not to waste things. I know that sounds silly, and but it's really at the heart of conservation is conservation. And we throw out an enormous amount of food that there isn't currently a good way to recycle. So if you can be a little bit more cautious about or thoughtful about what you buy and what you might then throw out, that also will go a long way towards reducing the amount of food that we need to produce.
Fantastic. You've been hearing from Stephen Porter, Professor of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at Brown University. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Anytime.